Creekside with Don and Jan. Welcome to Creekside with Don and Jan. If you care to live in harmony with nature and the land, and you wish to live more peacefully with all your fellow man, if self-reliant living is a big part of your plan, if you like to talk some politics with those who really can, this is the time, this is the place, Creekside with Don and Jan. Sit right down and make some space, Creekside with Don and Jan. Let's get started right away, Creekside with Don and Jan. No more singing, no delay, Creekside with Don and Jan. Creekside with Don and Jan.
Well, howdy and welcome to episode 269 of Creekside with Don and Jan. Hi, I'm Don Stover.
I'm Jan Stover, and today is March the 25th, 2018, and we have a guest with us tonight in the studio.
What else is it today, too? It's also Palm Sunday.
It is Palm Sunday.
Yeah, there we go.
My brother and I were talking about this when we were kids and would go to church, of course, every Sunday, and Palm Sunday was such a major event when we were little, and our mom was involved in Sunday school and Sunday school teaching, and she ordered real palms for us to walk down the church pews with. We were so impressed.
Well, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, and you had to get busy and get your Easter hats and gloves and dresses and shoes and in preparation
all
for
all of that
Easter
stuff that drives an economy.
That's true. I think there was a little more significance.
There's an Easter economy.
I was going to say there's a little more significance.
There's a Christmas economy. Mm-hmm. There's a Groundhog Day economy someplace.
Someplace. That's a movie.
In Punxsutawney, there's a Groundhog Day.
That's true. Yeah, and so, like I started to say, I think there's a more significance to these holidays and religious happenings than just the economy, but that's part of it.
There's a fungal economy.
And that, I think that's the segue you are making into our guest conversation.
I think it might be.
It's an interesting one, but okay.
But at any rate, we have Charles Ambuehl on as our guest today. Charles is, of course, proprietor at Wayne's Market and soon to be proprietor at Wayne's Market. Can we say that?
Sure.
All right. Why not?
He's easy to get along with. Sure.
He's easy to get along with. He's also a furiously curious farmer, owner of Furiously Curious Farms, and a columnist here for the Owl Creek Gazette, and all around good guy. Yeah, well, that's to be determined. He's going to share news of the farm and mushroom endeavors, and you've got your upcoming participation in the Owl Creek Gazette Self-Reliance Sustainability Fair. Howdy, Charles.
Hi, Don. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Charles. It's good to have you back. And, of course, people that will just tune in, we always say we should record the show before the show because that's where so much interesting conversation happens.
And we talk about all kinds of people and things.
We do.
Yeah.
Places, ideas, philosophies. And then we jump into the conversation here. So last time we were on the podcast, you still lived in town, but your goal was to get out to the farm and really dive right in. So can you share with us what you've done since you've made that move?
Okay.
Go.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. So far, I've spent a lot of money and not made any.
I think you wrote about that a little bit in your article for this March issue.
Yeah.
That's the reality of business, isn't it, when you're getting started?
Right. Yeah, just so far this season with renting some acreage over at the neighbor's house, I've spent probably $9,000 on seed and just equipment with nothing coming in. So a little stressful, but
you're
I think
reaping the rewards by being outdoors in nature, loving what you're doing and building on that, Charles.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, there you go.
Absolutely. But I think it's important to feel a little bit stressed or you're not going to dig in to make sure that you do well and are successful.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one of the main things that I'm looking forward to doing out there this year is using this device for the tractor called a mulch layer. And it's interesting in the fact that it lays down rows with irrigation in them and covers the rows with plastic. And then the irrigation is dripped under there, so it uses a small amount of water. And also with the plastic laid over it, it keeps the water from evaporating when there's a lot of sunshine and a hot summer day. Another advantage is if we get like an unbelievable amount of rain, the plants are still covered. You know, I'm dictating how much water they get.
Mm-hmm.
And other advantages with it is fertilization. I don't have to go around and fertilize each plant, you know, by hand. I can just feed it directly to the irrigation, right to the root zone.
Cool.
Yeah, so I can also use organic stuff a lot easier this way. Don't have to use as many sprays because, you know, there's no weeds around the plants.
Mm-hmm.
I can just mow between the rows until they vine out if they're vines, or if they're not vines, I don't have to worry about it.
So what are you growing out there besides pumpkins, I'm assuming?
Well, I got like 600 rhubarb plants.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm doing tomatoes and peppers, experimenting with watermelon and mm-hmm. cantaloupe, but not very much. And then I got a whole slew of foreign heirlooms for specialty gourds and squashes, and they're pretty interesting.
Like shapes and
oh yeah,
textures.
Things you've never seen. Baker Creek offers a lot of mm-hmm. them. It was where I got a lot of them. But then I just kind of searched on the internet for other strange ones. Everything. I have purple pumpkins. Apparently,
oh,
this
cool.
is a thing. Yeah, they're from Japan. You know, off the top of my head, I can't really think of too many of them, but I know there's a yellow pumpkin, which I've never really seen, and it's like a lemon color.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I think I'm going to end up having like 15 acres of vegetable garden, which is kind of insane, considering a lot of it's handwork. But I do have help this year, so that's good.
That's a good thing, too, isn't it?
Yeah. Got some of that lined out.
Ahead of time. That's really good.
Yeah, and I'm also trying to utilize more of the actual forest at the farm. We have a lot of woodland perennials that are kind of natural out there, including ginseng, golden seal, bloodroot, Virginia snake root. And then there's some that I've transplanted, too, like I ordered from the computer wild leeks, which are called ramps down south. Mm-hmm. If you were to go to like Tennessee and stuff, they're real big down there. And they are native to this area. They just weren't on my place, but now they are. Toothwort, blue and black cohosh, I planted out there. And these are all things that I can propagate from rhizomes. So I can dig them up, cut them up into little pieces, and then I can replant them and get, you know, 10 plants from one plant. So I can start small and get big over a long, well, kind of a long period of time, but I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
It is a long-term farming in and of itself because of its inherent growing season.
Right, and crops that grow in the shade aren't ready as quickly as ones that grow in the sun.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure.
They grow much slower.
Yeah, so that's it is a long-term view of, and it slows you down into a long-term view of reality, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's nice to get to go out and witness the changing of the seasons and everything because it's when you're growing something that's there all the time, you're out there all the time, you know, as opposed to just annual crops. You're only there in the summertime.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. Well, it's cool to hear you say some of the things that you're cultivating, like black cohosh.
Right.
You know, that's a For many women, a hormone replacement.
Absolutely.
And
so often things you think of just getting in capsules at a natural food store or something. People
sure.
don't even hardly think that it grows. You
right.
know, we have a tendency to think things come in cans and bottles and pill form and that kind of thing.
Most people don't realize when you buy herbs like that and they're processed, as soon as they're ground down into a powder, the surface area to which oxygen can hit them is, you know, greatly increased. And so they actually lose their potency really fast. Like if I had a golden seal root, I ground it up, and in a few months, it's going to lose most of its good alkaloids and things. But if you leave the root whole and just grind it whenever you need it, it preserves it much better
mm-hmm.
too. So there's an advantage to having a fresh root.
Closer to nature is always the best.
Oh, absolutely.
The farther away you get, then you it shows its wear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you find the market for things like this?
Like where do I sell to?
Yeah.
It depends on which herb you're talking about.
So like, it's a varied market.
Yeah.
You're not talking about retail here at this point.
No. So like when I sell golden seal or ginseng, I usually go to a dealer, you know, mm-hmm. and my local dealer is John Turley around here.
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
so I sell those roots to him. However, I could sell golden seal online and get more money out of it, but then I deal with shipping and all those other headaches. And I kind of like just throwing things in a box, taking them to a place and selling them all right there.
That's cool. It is cool. The fungi activities that you have been doing as a fun guy are
they have been a little
bit continuing.
Yeah, absolutely. They've been a little bit slowed down. So when I moved into the house, though, I had to. It's an old farmhouse. Let me back up a little bit, and it is disgusting. Is the best way to put it. There are probably more contaminants in that house than. You know, in your toilet. I don't know. It's just this house has been standing for a long time and it's been neglected. And so I had to tear the whole back room out and basically remodel it with FRP, which is like fiberglass reinforced plastic. It doesn't grow mold, things like that. And then I had to set up an air filtration system in it, which all of that costs about $5,000. But inside of that room, like, nothing is contaminated. You know, I have to wear a full body. Well, I don't have to, but I have a jacket.
You choose
to. Yeah, I get really clean before I go in there and cover my hair and have a jacket and everything. And then in this room, right now I only have about 10 different cultures. I'd say about 15. 10 of them are ones I got from Paul Stamets when I went for that growing medical and gourmet mushroom seminar. But some of them are wild cultures that I've thought would be good ones to try to grow. So in this room, all I'm doing is maintaining these cultures and then also growing them out as spawn. So when it comes time to plug logs or inoculate ground beds that I'm doing, I can take the spawn out of the room and use them instead of having to buy them from a company. So that's kind of slowed down because these things have to grow in this room, you know, before I can take them out. So I started them from a test tube a month ago, and now I just have petri dishes and some bags of spawn, but in another 2 months, it'll be, you know, it could be up to 100 times that, but I probably won't work at that rate. It'll probably only be about 20 times.
So do you look like a mad scientist sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah.
So if you ever go live on Facebook
yeah,
and you show your room, we'll be prepared?
The worst was a time I had some bugs get into my pumpkins last year that would have decimated some of them. So I had to use a pesticide that was – I would say is not considered safe. So I took precautions and I literally was wearing a hazmat suit with a gas mask on. And I thought, this isn't farming. Like, this isn't right. But it was either that or lose my crop. So I had to make a decision and I did it.
So you mentioned Paul Stamets.
Stamets.
I knew because Paul Stamets, I think, is an actor.
And I may have not articulated that properly.
The fungi guy that you went to. Have you stayed in contact with him since you went ahead and did the class and workshop?
Yeah. So this September, I'm going out there again for a mycoremediation workshop, which is a little different. It's about cleaning up the environment using fungus because there's a few strands of fungus that digest hydrocarbons. And so it's about implementing those. And then, as I talked about before on here, the species that digest bugs, he's training them to like certain kind of bugs so that we could use them as pesticides in the field.
It's as exciting as what fungus can do as hemp can do for that market. I mean, it's just amazing that we've gone this long without those benefits and without that knowledge. And seeing that come to life and starting to take root, pardon the pun, but, you know, the fact that it actually is, people are saying, time to wake up and see what we can do to save the planet in a whole different way.
Sure. And I think that there's always been people that were woke, as you might say, but the vested interests in this country are hard to get away from.
They do have control of a lot of things, don't they?
Unless it's got the glaring symbol of Monsanto on it, it doesn't happen sometimes, right? Well, hopefully you're making a change for the good, for the better.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Before we went on air, you were talking too about wildcrafting. If you would tell us a little bit more about how you describe that and what all you find when you go out. I know you said you're out in nature doing your own thing too, but a little more detail might be fun.
Okay. So I define it as gathering food or medicine or anything that you can use from the wild. I don't know how you define it.
That works for me, Charles.
Okay. So out at my place, I'm pretty lucky. I mean, I have persimmons and pawpaws. There's this plant called spicebush that grows out there, and it's the cousin to sassafras in the laurel family of trees. And spicebush, it's a low growing shrub, but it actually uses its leaves as a calcium sink. A lot of plants send their nutrients back through the roots and then store the calcium and other nutrients in the roots for the next year, but they leave the calcium in the leaves and drop it on the ground, and then in time it causes all the soil where they grow to have a lot of calcium in it, and it brings plants that are very high valued are calcareous, I think that's the word that they mm-hmm. use, and things like one of the only orchids native to here can grow there. Ginseng loves calcium. There's just a lot of really good, valuable medical herbs that grow in like high calcium soils. So
calcium is an acidic neutralizer, right?
Right.
So
yeah, black walnut is the one that actually uses its leaves as a calcium sink too. And people always say, "Well, nothing grows under black walnut." Well, your garden won't grow under it, mm-hmm. but there are things that grow under black walnut.
We have 2 black walnut trees on our property, and no, you cannot grow a tomato anywhere near them.
No, and I know this. This is very true.
It's like, not going to happen.
Right, right.
So, yeah, we have a lot of nut trees out there, too. We have a lot of butternut. I actually have sugar maple trees out there, but only like probably 20 on the whole property. The neighbor actually has some, and they just kind of volunteer, grew on one corner of mine, so I tapped them this year, and I've been saving up the sap and boiling it down.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, it's been an interesting venture. I've ruined some.
That's how we learn.
Yeah.
Maple syrup powdered?
Well, no. So instead of one time I gathered the sap, and what I did was I didn't refrigerate it. I thought, oh, I'll just leave it still on the counter, and whenever I have time, I'll do it. It fermented real fast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was walked in. I was like, what's that smell?
Ooh, that smell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you told us something about in this last article that maple syrup is used, not syrup, but the sap of the tree mm-hmm. can be an energizing drink.
Yeah. So I have a lot of books on Eastern culture because of being into growing ginseng and things like that. Their whole culture is based around some of these plants. And mm-hmm. tree sap in particular, they actually, if you go to the grocery store in China during this time of year, there are gallons of tree sap to buy, just like we buy milk. And they kind of, in their culture, look at it as a way to pull their body out of hibernation.
I think that is so cool.
Yeah, and it is delicious. You'd be surprised. Like, it is very subtle, the sweetness, because it's only 3% sugar, but it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you ever have a batch of that that you just can't drink.
I got a 5-gallon bucket in my fridge right now if you want me to.
I should have said, Charles, bring that with you when you come.
Yeah,
we could have been tasting that right here on air.
Well, 5 gallons will break down into about, let's see, 8 gallons to make a quart.
Right? Yeah. 20. Well, I'd need 20 gallons to make 1 gallon.
Yeah. 20 to 1. Right.
That's why sometimes it's just worth drinking as is, isn't
right.
it? Yeah.
I like easy.
You say that, and yet you've taken on some of the hardest jobs in farming and being your own farmer of of an organic style.
Yeah, you could say that they are daunting tasks, but they're not as daunting as buying a $600,000 combine and spending $100,000 on seed. And, you know, I mean, the kind of farming that gets done around here is way harder, I think. Financially.
Well, I love that perspective. The fact that you've looked at that way and said, this is the way I want to go for all those reasons.
Right.
Yeah. So what else do you have growing out there that you have? Oh, one thing I want to back up. You said you grow rhubarb.
Yeah.
I know that when my grandpa was alive, his favorite thing in the world was rhubarb pie.
Yeah.
And I was never a real fan of rhubarb pie, but I want to give it a try. So do you use your rhubarb in anything besides pie?
So I don't even make pie. The reason I planted rhubarb is the last 10 years I've been buying and selling fruits and vegetables. A half bushel of rhubarb has never been under $35.
Oh, so, wow. So what you're telling us,
I grew it to make money.
Yes, that's smart.
I'm shallow.
And you know, that's a good place for us to take a segue here. We're doing this to make money. We'll talk to you in just a few seconds. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Mason Schweppe, owner of Schweppe's Assistant Services, and I would like to invite you to drop by my vendor booth at Owl Creek Gazette Self-Reliance and Sustainability Fair on Saturday, April 14th at the American Farm Heritage Museum here in Greenville, Illinois. I'll be there introducing people to all the services my business offers, such as grocery delivery, house maintenance, yard work, junk removal, and more. I will be offering estimates and coupons. Get your tickets in advance at owlcreekgazette.com or at the door. See you at the fair.
Hi, this is Laura Myers. I want to take this opportunity to thank all of you who supported me during the March primary in my endeavor to make a difference. Now you can make a difference by helping independent and third-party candidates with their petition drives. Did you know they generally must get 6 times the signatures than candidates of the 2 main political parties just to get on the ballot this fall in Illinois? Never let go of your independence and freedoms. God bless you and the United States of America.
Hi, this is Val Gaffner, and I would like to invite you to drop by my vendor booth, Gaffner's Photography and Woodworking, at the Owl Creek Gazette Self-Reliance and Sustainability Fair on Saturday, April 14th at the American Farm Heritage Museum here in Greenville, Illinois. I'll have roll photography, birdhouses, and yard ornaments on display and for sale. Tickets for the event are available at owlcreekgazette.com and at the door. Hope to see you at the fair.
And we're back. So, making money—that's a great way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah,
$35 a bushel,
half bushel.
I want to say there's nothing shallow about making money. If you don't make money and you go broke, then you can't produce the kind of foods that we want to eat. Mm-hmm, so the reality is, every time you do your job right and make money and stay in business, we all benefit as the consumer.
I like that.
You'll take that to the bank, won't you, Charles?
Literally.
I'd rather not take it to the bank.
Well, but I think, you know, in this, people do have a tendency to think that making money shouldn't be the goal, that it should be something better than that, or that it's evil. And I want to say right here and now that without that, again, like we say, you don't stay in business, then your goods and services are no longer available. And if we want those goods and services, which we do, we want options. The more things on the marketplace, the better for the consumer, always.
Yeah. I don't really care about making money. However, it is a good way to keep score of how good I'm doing.
Well, that's a good way to look at it, too.
Yeah, each year I can kind of tell whether or not I was successful.
Mm-hmm. If that's the way to continue or if you need to look elsewhere.
Right.
And the scorecard, you know, the annual financial colonoscopy we all go through.
Wow.
Just think
that's
about
deep.
It. Well, literally.
But I'm wrong.
Yeah, we're getting ready to have that annual colonoscopy. So it is what makes the world go round, one way or the other. I mean, it makes the world go round. And as long as you're going to do it, you might as well be successful at it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I was going to ask something. I'm it's gone.
Okay, you think of what you're going to ask, and I'll ask my next question.
You go right ahead.
We said earlier in the show that you were going to join us again this year at the Owl Creek Gazette Self-Reliance and Sustainability Fair, this year as just a vendor.
That was right. It.
Yeah. Okay, see, I read your mind, Don. You did. Even though you couldn't, I was doing it. Such is the benefit of being married.
Yes.
So
we complete each other.
We do. This is getting deep.
Now you can make maple syrup out of this sap, too.
Ba-da-ba. Anyway, so last year you spoke on really how to raise mushrooms. This year you'll be a vendor, so I'm sure people will be stopping by your table and saying, Charles, can you tell me more? But they also will be able to buy some things. And I know you haven't really zeroed in on what exactly you're going to bring, but it's going to be things from your farm, correct?
Right. As far as like the mushrooms go, I don't know if I'll have any actual mushrooms there for sale or not, but I will probably for sure have spawn. Mm-hmm. You know, things that people can use to grow their own mushrooms. I'll definitely have starter plants from like golden seal and ginseng up there. I think people will be really interested in that, especially when I tell them how much they sell for. I don't know if I'll have maple syrup ready or not. You know, I've only made about a quart. I've been drinking most of the sap. So,
well, it's good.
And mainly the reason is I don't have a good way to boil it down at this point. I need either to go cut down a bunch of hedge so I can get a real good hot fire going and boil it outside, or spend some money on propane, which I'm not for that.
Yeah, that's not good. And hedge, you're right. Hedge is the right way to go.
Oh, absolutely.
And do you have an outdoor vessel for boiling?
No. I have a 55-gallon drum.
Yeah, yeah. You need a good flat-bottomed shallow pan.
Oh, I have canning, big canning vats that are like 250-gallon drums cut in half, so okay. They're shallow.
Yeah.
I could use those possibly, but, yeah. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
This is all new, you know.
Well, you know, what I've seen in sugaring operations in the past, I grew up in southern Illinois where you have I guess you'd call it a sorghum mill in every corner in the South. And they would always have wide and long pans that they would build these fires under.
Oh, okay.
And put the sap in those things.
I see.
And they would add more sap as they were going and just keep pushing the solution, stirring that solution and evaporating it as they go. And eventually, you know, after 8 hours or so, you're boiling all the water out of it, you're making syrup.
You know,
I don't know. Do you know what the concentration is supposed to be called syrup?
Well, no, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know if it has to do with the viscosity or if it's about the sugar content. I mean, yeah. I'm sure they're hand in hand.
Yeah, they are. I just don't – like 13, 15, 20% sugars, you know.
Well, the sap is 3% coming out of the tree.
Okay.
And if we're going 20 to 1,
yeah.
You know.
There you go. Yeah, I don't even know why I'm asking the question, because sugaring time is it nearly over?
Yeah, I would say right now it's running the hardest, and then it's going to be over.
Yeah.
Yep, there's a big run right now as it warms up, but yeah, it's about over.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And then, of course, there's next year.
Yep.
You can just take some water and add 3% sugar to it and start boiling it down, right?
I don't think it'll taste the same.
I don't think it would either. It'd just be a waste of hedge.
Bonfire time, huh?
Bonfire time. And practice at futility.
I want to get back to some of the trees you said on your property. And one of them was butternut that I've never heard of. And then you'd mentioned some earlier to us, too. So not that you have a lot to share necessarily about these trees, but I'm fascinated by a tree that I've never heard about.
Okay.
So.
Well, a butternut is a lot like a walnut tree. Like the leaves are, you know, small and right across from each other, just the same as a walnut. But they don't get quite as tall usually. Some of them more interesting trees on the property, I'd say, were that Kentucky coffee bean tree that I had talked about before. And they drop these big bean pods, and inside of them is like a sticky gum and a large, maybe four or five large seeds. And apparently you can use them as a substitute for coffee. And I haven't tried it, and I'm not telling people to go try it. So
that's not our goal.
Right.
Always consult.
But if you do try it, let us know how that tastes.
Yeah. Another strange thing about my place is people always often say, oh yeah, you know, it's an ash or an elm tree because they're dead or dying. But out at my place, that isn't so true. I've got ash trees that are, I mean, I don't know, 2 foot around, and elm trees that are 4 foot around. I mean, yes, I have seen like the
Dutch elm problem.
Yeah, I have seen the D-shaped bore holes in the emerald ash vine or emerald ash borer, and I have seen the little squiggly beetle marks under the bark falling off of old elms, but they also seem to be doing really well. You know, it's not like there's big ones, there's small ones. You know, you can tell that they're reproducing and they're continuing on, you know. But I do notice in other woods, that's not necessarily true. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Well, yeah, your farm sounds like a great place to live, whether you're a human or a tree or a vegetable or a fungi.
Yeah, it absolutely is. There's always animals in my yard, whether they're coyotes or rabbits or deer or raccoons or possum.
And, you know, that's interesting because we were just commenting how few rabbits we see in town anymore.
Yeah.
When I was little girl, a rabbit was not as common as a squirrel, but very often did you see a rabbit.
Cats in town hurt rabbits pretty bad.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Yeah, that's a big problem in town.
Okay, I didn't realize what might be, you know.
Well, and the other thing, too, you're not even seeing rabbits outside in the farming community either, because they're wiping out hedgerows to put in more crops.
That and like the red-tailed hawk, the chicken hawk, people call it too. They are decimating them. I started putting pallets down out in the woods so that they could build homes where coyotes and stuff couldn't get to their nests. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be working. The rabbit population has grown.
Oh, that's neat. And we've seen, talk about red-tailed hawks, everywhere we go now, we see them.
Yeah.
So we don't see the rabbits.
Right.
We see the red-tailed hawks. So I might have answered my own question there.
And, you know, red-tailed hawks also, you know, work on, they'll take voles out.
Oh, yeah. I don't mind that.
Yeah. Nobody minds of taking out a vole.
I see snakes in their mouths sometimes, too, even.
Yeah.
Flying with a little snake in their mouth.
Well, sometimes owls do that for us, too, don't
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely.
Ooh, like the owl we've got in the background.
Well, and when you did live in town, speaking of owls, and you took that great picture of that owl that just popped up, tell us about that experience of seeing that owl.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. I actually pulled up into my driveway, and it was that picture was on the fence by my house, but when I pulled into my driveway, it was actually on the porch.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And I happened to have my DSLR in the car. I was like, no way. And so I got it out, and as soon as I got it ready, he like flew down to the ground, and he must have been hunting something, and then it looked like maybe I disoriented him or something, and then he kind of took off, and I thought he was gone, but then I look and he was sitting right there on that fence. And I got out of the car, and every time he would look away, I'd take one step towards him, and I ended up getting about 8 feet away from him, I would say, before he realized, wait a minute, this guy got real close.
And, I think I should be concerned here.
Yeah, he flew away after that. But
you got some great pictures.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, that is neat.
My mom actually sent me a text message a few days ago, and she said, what kind of bird is this? And took a picture of this bird in her yard. And I just laughed, ha ha, like, have you never seen an owl before? And she was a little embarrassed about that, I think.
Well, we've got to get some more. Charles is showing me the pictures of the owl.
Yeah, one of these days we'll have video and we can share that too.
Clearly an owl. And speaking of owls, Roxanne Bear posted.
I saw that.
Yes, picture for people who didn't, that an owl had looked like he'd been hurt in her in the alley behind her house, and she stayed with him till someone came and scooped him up and took him down to the treehouse in Metro East area. I can't remember exactly what town that's in.
Yeah, that's actually the same story. This one was injured in my mom's yard. Yeah, and then they came, and some people that were going to help it came and got it. I don't know what group it was, but somebody came and got the bird.
We're all about helping the owls, for sure. They've done their part for us. It's the least we can do for them.
All they have to do is sit there and be wise, right?
That's right.
I know. What would all them seventh graders do in science class without owls?
Yeah, no
and
kidding.
Pellets.
Oh, that's right, the pellets.
You got to have something to take apart in science
class.
That's
an experiment to remember, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, Don, you look like you're...
I think we're pretty much out of time.
Okay, so Charles, we've enjoyed having you as always, and we look forward to having you come to the fair. I almost said Expo Home Show.
We are going to have to come up with a better name maybe next year for...
I got it.
Okay.
Party.
Oh, I love it. Somebody said we should just have fun. Okay, the Owl Creek is at self-reliance and sustainability.
Party.
Yes.
As named by Charles
Amble. Sounds so good.
Okay, you're on.
Next year.
You got to come speak at that one.
Okay. It's a party.
Sounds good, Charles. So thanks again for coming in. We will see you on April the 14th, if not before.
All right.
Y'all take care now.
Good night, folks.
Bye-bye.